Oh, grandfather, tell me how it was when you were young. Was the world so very old when your life had just begun?
Good afternoon and welcome to Living Permaculture on KDNK. I'm Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, joined by my co-host Jerome Osentowski of Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute in Basalt, Colorado. Our guest today is Mark Congdon, Director of Agriculture at Gaining Ground, a nonprofit organic farm in Concord, Massachusetts. Gaining Ground grows vegetables and fruit with the help of several thousand community volunteers and donates all their fresh produce to area meal programs and food pantries. They envision a future where everyone has equitable access to healthy, sustainably grown produce. Mark Congdon was born and raised in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. He received 2 years of farmer training as an apprentice at Caretaker Farm in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Mark continued to grow as a farmer, managing Saltbox Farm in Concord, Massachusetts for 9 years and then Honeynut Farm in Hopkinton, Massachusetts prior to bringing his experience to Gaining Ground in 2023. Mark, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your show and to represent Gaining Ground and all of our community.
Thank you. And did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did.
In all those cities in Massachusetts?
Well, we kind of say Concord.
Concord, okay. Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, the first thing that struck me when I saw a short Vimeo video on Gaining Ground's website, it was the size of your operation. You say you have about 20 acres in production, where you grow over 115,000 pounds of fresh produce, which is donated to an average of 10,000 people per year via food pantries, meal programs, schools, and homeless shelters. How many employees? Well, I guess we know how many volunteers, but how many employees does it take to keep track of all that?
Yeah, you're right. It does take a great amount of just really wonderful mission-driven folks from all walks of expertise to really make this work. And the lineage of farmers and members just still sustain the energy here. Currently, we have a board of 17 members. We have our executive director, Jennifer Johnson. We have an operations director, Allison. She's in charge of connecting with all of our partners and relaying all the information to our farmers. We have our development manager, Danny, whom you had some interactions with. She actually just went on for more schooling. So now we have Brenna. And then we have our talented team of professional farmers. We have two farm co-managers, Christy and Carrie, our volunteer manager, Avery, three assistant growers, Maddie, Rachel, and Ava. We have two field crew members, Zoe and Madison. And then we also have our beekeeper, David. We have our landscaper, Jeff, and our accountant, Kathy. And everyone is just it's amazing to get to work with such talent and such passion every day within everybody. And then, yeah, as you said, we have our volunteer groups. We have about 3,000 volunteers a year, all of our programs, community farm team. We currently have a group of 27 volunteers once a week that they commit to. We have our high school farm team summer program and so many individuals who have a huge impact on the farm. One of our volunteers, Bauka, is a highly respected community member. And we can't do any of it without everybody. It's really wonderful.
Well, it looks like you actually have a farm school there as well. Cardiff, you're teaching all these volunteers how to garden and farm, and they also get some produce out of it, don't they? They take home produce as well?
They do. All of our farmers do. Our office staff do. And every now and then, some of the community farm teams will take home some samplings of food. But still, all of our partners receive the bulk of everything that we harvest.
Yeah, well, there's really a lot of social capital you're building there with all of that community involvement.
Right. I saw on your website that your values or Gaining Ground's values are integrity, equity, inclusion, inspiration, continuous learning, and sustainability. I like that. Can you share some ways that you've seen some of your volunteers be impacted by their work at Gaining Ground?
Yeah, we have all types of groups here, and you know, from young children to older adults, and the school groups and corporate groups, religious groups, special needs programs. And so I think just like you were saying to Rome about a lot of the educational aspects are super impactful. So people are working alongside our professional farmers, and they're learning various techniques and tips to take to their home gardens or their community gardens, which is such a great way to pass on information. And like the youth being able to connect the dots when they're helping a harvest and pulling a carrot out of the ground, you know, the impacts, you know, that they're having as young sponges, getting to learn where their food comes from. And then also just building the space of a community where people can have social time and become friends, and especially for our local volunteer teams. And of course, being able to create the space for people to connect with nature, you know, and you kind of just leave it up to that connection alone to help people have an impactful feeling and take that to wherever their work is or their communities are. And I do find that very healing and spending time with the land.
That's awesome. Was that quite a change of pace from you, having worked at for-profit farms, to start working with more volunteers and groups?
You know, even when I was in for-profit, I was working with a lot of people. We had, I always had a CSA going, Community Service Supported Agriculture, where people buy in a share of produce, and then they'll do that in the beginning of the year, and then they start coming once we start harvesting in June, and they'll continue all the way through once a week until the end of October. And so I'd always, through my learning as an apprentice and through bringing that to Concord, create that space up in the fields, either to come and pick, you pick crops, so all the cherry tomatoes or the beans or some herbs, all the folks are welcomed up in the fields. Bring your kids, you know, come and pick this food and experience where it's all grown. And then also creating volunteer spaces for that as well. So fortunately, coming here, that wasn't much of a change for me. I also had a high school team that would come and help. And, you know, you'd see a high school student coming from their class and their day, and they're coming to the farm, and whatever, you know, challenges they had, you'd see them kind of disgruntled as they arrive, and then by the time they're leaving, they have a smile on their face, feeling great.
Exactly. They get grounded, and they put away their cell phone, and they can do something real and eat some good food, maybe some sugar snaps or whatever. Do you have good lunches there as well, with lots of salads and stuff?
We do. There are lots of potlucks on the farm. It's wonderful.
Right.
So we talked about taking care of people through education and your volunteers, but also you're growing food exclusively for hunger relief, addressing food insecurity, which is on the rise in Massachusetts and probably everywhere. And food insecurity is defined as the condition of not having access to sufficient food or food of sufficient quality to meet one's needs. What percentage of the population in Massachusetts is affected by food insecurity, and how was your founder inspired to create Gaining Ground, the organization?
So yeah, I mean, currently, I think it was from a report in February, it's 17.9%. of the population of Massachusetts that's experiencing food insecurity, and yeah, our founder Jamie Bemis, they had the vision of growing food with volunteers, all to be donated back in 1994, which began right in their front yard, which later would be moved here to Virginia Road, where our flagship farm is. And now, as you said, we're donating about an average of 120,000 pounds of food. Like you said earlier, serving 10,000 individuals or 1,200 households, and all through our partner organizations. We also have a program called Food for Families, where we have our local local families experiencing food insecurity. And so right now we have 120 families that will receive weekly boxes that we build for them, and with our fresh produce, as well as bouquets of flowers as well.
Oh, that's so nice. Tell us about the difference in your from your perspective of food grown in really healthy soil and how that affects the nutrition of that nutritional value of the food.
Right. So we grow using all organic practices and no-till systems, and part of that is to increase the nutrient density within the crops themselves. Our focus is on building microbial life in the soil, and so we take that no-till approach so we can keep feeding our microbes, our bacteria, and our mycelium as much organic matter as possible, maintaining the networks they create. So that way, when we do have a seed or a plant or a seedling in there, they are at the ready, transforming all those compounds in the soil into accessible compounds of nutrients for our plant. And so once our plants uptake these nutrients, they become stronger. They're able to fend off disease and pests better. And then their fruits and vegetables end up having that much more nutrients within them, better taste, as well as just everyone who eats them ingests that much more nutrients.
How do you measure and keep track of your soil health?
So a lot of the ways that we are currently keeping track is by how the produce and the food is coming out, and the ability to withstand the pest and disease. And so within these no-till systems, the soil health is so rich that we're actually able to flip a bed, if you will. It's when you grow a crop and then you harvest it out and then you prepare the soil for the next crop. And we can do that with various crops up to three times in a season. We started our no-till systems back in 2016, and now we're able to, we don't necessarily have to do crop rotation because of the nutrients or of the microbial life that's in the soil. And we're seeing just healthy plants. Also with climate change, you know, we had a very wet season last year, but we were still able to produce and meet similar numbers that we met the prior year, that we associate that to our healthy soils, able to withstand this water, able to drain it, able to absorb water during drought. And some of these differences that we can see now, because we are in an expansion mode with our newly acquired piece of land at the National Park. So we can vastly see the differences taking place. And then one of the things that we're actually going to be working on is using the brick system, if you're familiar with this, but it's where you can actually take the juices of a pepper or tomato or carrot, and through this device, a refractometer, you can actually see the salts or the sugars and kind of identify how much nutrients are within that. And we think it might be a really great experiment and analysis for the next bunch of years as we're building the national park from a 2.5 organic matter, 2.5% of organic matter to where we're at Virginia Road, which is anywhere between 7% and 13%, depending upon the area. So that's an exciting experiment we're working on.
Well, yeah, I was pleased to hear that you all have that program in your area where national parks are leased out for agriculture. In our area, we have a similar program with our open spaces where they're leased out on 10-year leases for agricultural production. So can you tell us more about that project at Minuteman National Park?
Yes, it's very exciting. It's fortunately for us not far. It's a 4-minute drive.
Ooh, wow.
To where we're growing. And yeah, we acquired 6 acres that we're cultivating, about 3.5 of that. We're bringing all of our practices that we have here, creating permanent beds. We do a growing block, so 18 80-foot beds, and that is what we're doing as well at the national park, where we can kind of insert into the crop plan what we already know, like the hours it takes for labor to do various tasks, as well as for materials. We use things like Remay or ProtectNet to cover our crops, as well as being able to insert into the crop plans the numbers and yields hoping to attain. So we're bringing all of these wonderful practices of no-till and lots of compost applications. But we're also being really smart about a slow rollout. We're kind of being pretty methodical about it. This year we're only growing on 3 plots. We chose a few crops specifically to get started on, and we have kind of a 3-to-5-year plan to get us into full production while we increase all of our needed items, such as labor and infrastructure at the park.
Yeah, we have a similar program here where the Pitkin County especially, and they do partner with Eagle County, that there's so much open space land, and it's somewhat most of the time left in hay or grazing. But over the last 20 years, we probably have a dozen or more farmers up and down the corridor, up and down the valley. There are dozens of, 5-2-acre farms on public land. And we also have a funding agency called Slow Money to give farmers a interest-free loan. And that's all being organized by the Farm Collaborative here. And so that's all happened in the last 20 years. And that could be a model for every community, basically. And we've been talking about trying to get the town of Carbondale to take a 35-acre parcel they have right next to the town and do a community farm. A city farm similar to the goals and guidelines that you're talking about here with your farm. And we could add greenhouses, forest garden, orchards. So I think that's that could be the model going forward to get to more healthy food into people's kitchens. And we're hoping that maybe people hear this podcast here and will spur some interest into doing something over there besides just having a dog run on the park,
Yeah, what was what agricultural use was Minuteman previously used for, the section you're leasing?
On the section we are leasing, I believe it was in either corn or sunflowers. There's a big sunflower company or farmer that grows a lot. Some of the most sunflowers come out of there that are around in the area. And then definitely corn was a part of it. So, pretty decent conventional style growing production. So the land definitely shows the desire for these amendments and also building that biodiverse ecosystem,
right.
Which is something that I continue to learn more about as I progress into building our hedgerows that we have at Virginia Road, our flagship property, and then bringing that as well. So we'll put a hedgerow in between these 80-foot beds. And the hedgerow will contain goldenrod or Joe pieweed or elderberry or our peach trees that we're going to be putting in to help for all the various aspects of attracting birds or various pollinators, and as well as like helping to, because it's very vast space, and the national park does want us to maintain a especially here at the Minuteman, maintain a pastoral view, but they are keen on us putting in these peach trees to help with some wind barrier and protection as well.
Awesome. Yeah, so peach trees, blueberries, raspberries, asparagus, and perennial herbs, I read, that you were planning to incorporate eventually?
Yeah, exactly. We are, we've worked on a lot of some native pollinators that were pollinator plants that were put in a little nursery in that we're going to eventually get out to our hedgerows. And I've successfully created the permanent beds for all of our blueberry plants that we hope to plant next year as well. And a lot of these crops too are because our partners really desire more fruit. And so, you know, adding the peaches and the raspberries and the blueberries is, and we might add other berries as well as we progress with this, but it's definitely important to us to hear from our partners.
Having the pollinators are really important because of climate change. Every spring, it seems like we're getting wet, cold springs. So the more bees you can have on site or more pollinator plants, the more opportunities you're going to get things pollinated. You know, we love to have pollinators in every bed, actually. And in I was watering this morning. I'm doing a test of 15 varieties of cherry tomatoes in my greenhouses. And I'm doing a project for Puerto Rico, and I noticed that the white cabbage moth was flying around, and I've been spraying it to try to kill it, but I have kale mixed in my tomatoes, and they're not laying eggs on the kale, so I'm wondering, what are they doing in here? And it finally dawned on me, they're pollinating the tomatoes. So I'm going to stop killing them and just let them do their thing, because they're setting a lot of tomatoes onto the tomatoes, and I don't see any other pollinators. And that's true. Sometimes the bees and wasps don't show up. A butterfly or a moth will show up and be the pollinator. So we have to embrace everything and plant a lot of flowering plants on a succession. Alyssum is really a big one for lacewings. I have baskets of alyssum in my greenhouses. Catnip outside, sunflowers, pollinators everywhere, hollyhocks, because every month there's a new flower that's feeding the pollinators.
Does David and his beehives, do they ever struggle from finding pollination sources, Mark?
Well, he strategically placed the beehives over by. We do have a small orchard. We have multiple fruit trees on the farm here at Virginia Road, and he has those bees right over by one of our smaller orchards. And I do know that he is very interested in diving more into what the bees are foraging on, and you know, some of the challenges that he faces with the varroa mites.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's definitely involved in you know, seeing what opportunities are present when we have all these pollinating native plants around.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, in preparation for closing our program, I wanted to direct our listeners to the FAQ, or Frequently Asked Questions, section of Gaining Ground's website at gainingground.org, because there was some useful information there. They can find contact information to find out about volunteering or donating with Gaining Ground. And I also saw there are instructions to request a copy of Gaining Ground's model of hunger relief and volunteerism in a model overview, in case any of our listeners are interested in possibly starting something like that in their communities. Mark, is there any other contact information or directions to resources you'd like to share with our listeners?
I mean, checking out the website is wonderful. We definitely have areas for any kind of funders or people that want to donate, or like you said, learning about our model and our programming. It is such a great way to build community while building sustainable practices and just helping people get access to nutritious food. And I understand, you know, we're all the way over here in Concord, Massachusetts, but we always like to invite people to check out their local sustainable agriculture and find their farmers and see what they're up to and find ways that you can support them. Keeping that motivation going and strengthen the movement in all areas, it's just what's needed.
Yeah. And it sounds like people can also find Gaining Ground on social media. Would that be Facebook?
Yeah, we're on both. We're on Instagram and we're also on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Mark Congdon, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule building soil and growing nutritious food to join us today.
Thank you so much. It was really great to join you both. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for all you do and spreading these conversations and ideas to your listeners. It's really wonderful and for the greater good. So thank you.
Likewise. Thank you. And thank you to our listeners for joining us today. I'm your host, Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, joined by my co-host, Jerome Osentowski of Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute, or CRIMPI, in Basalt, Colorado. You can find my contact info at coloradoedibleforest.com, and you can find Jerome's contact info at crmpi.org. Tune in next month on KDNK on the third Monday of the month at 4 p.m. for another episode of Living Permaculture. We'll talk to you then.